It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Mark Murphy became president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers just before the team went on one of their most successful winning streaks in their history, which is saying a lot for the most storied team in football. So, yeah, I have no impartiality when it comes to the Pack. Murphy is uniquely qualified to run a professional sports team. He played for the Washington Redskins, winning Super Bowl 18 in 1984, which included a key game-changing interception. While with Washington, he got his MBA, then his law degree, then after retirement, led the athletic programs at Colgate, his alma mater, and Northwestern. He also was assistant executive director for the NFL Players Association, and now he sits across the table from the person who currently holds that position. But the last few years have not been easy for the NFL or the Packers. Aside from Rodgers' right shoulder, the team dealt with players taking knees to protest police brutality affecting black citizens, and the league is grappling with this issue of concussions and the possible long-term brain damage associated with head injury. And Mark Murphy is on the health committee. Even the name of the team for which Murphy used to play is kind of controversial. So what is the future for the NFL and of the Packers? We're going to ask Mark Murphy, who is sitting across from me here in the Green Bay studios. Welcome, sir.
Welcome, Gary, and welcome to Green Bay.
And I know you haven't been in Wisconsin often or long,
but
it's great to have you here.
I
understand you're a Packer fan.
I have been a Packer fan since I was a preteen. I chose the Packers pre-Favre because I loved the history, and I also rooted for the underdog. And back then, it was an underdog team. So
this was the 70s and the 80s?
Yeah,
The down decades?
Yes. We're taking your calls, and we've got a few calls coming in already. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org.
Carrie, you did not mention in my background that for 10 years I was a commentator on NPR.
Yes, I have heard that. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
You talked to
the man himself, Bob Edwards.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I love that. I started doing it at the end of my career and then continued to do it when I stayed in Washington after my playing career had ended. But when I moved out of the area, it made it difficult. But I really enjoyed it. Bob Edwards is great. And,
yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
That's fun. Okay, so the first question I have to ask you is, how's Aaron?
He's doing great.
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
He looks good.
He's going to be healthy.
He is. We're going to be very careful with him in preseason. He's going to be in bubble wrap.
Who's
that? He'll play some. You know, it's a fine line because you do need game reps because no matter what you do, It's not the same. The practice is so different than actual game.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs some time in the games, but you know, also obviously you want to make sure that he and all of our other starters are healthy. So it's a fine balance. It's funny, back when I was playing, we never worried about injuries. You know, they had more players, but the game has changed. I think for the best in many, many ways. I mean, the way we practice now, it's very different. But still, you can't replace game reps. I mean, that was for the preseason game last night. That was the first time that we tackled people to the ground. And so for special teams and certain positions, you really can't tell about people until you see them in game action.
Interesting. Who are his backups? I mean, that was part of the problem last year is that, you know, he went out and there was nobody really there to hold the fort.
Yeah, you know, our backup last year was Brett Hundley. He's been our backup. I think this will be his fourth year. He actually played well last night. We traded for Deshone Kizer, who was a first-round pick of the Cleveland Browns last year. Started for them for 15 games, and so we feel really good about him. The reality, though, Carrie, is you know when you have a franchise quarterback, when he gets hurt, it's you know it's really hard to replace him to play at the same level. But it was disappointing. You know, in 2013, Aaron missed a number of games, and we were able to kind of work our way through it and made it into the playoffs. But last year, I don't think we had the depth overall that we needed to overcome an injury to somebody like Aaron.
Okay, so you have a franchise quarterback who is 34 years old right now.
Yeah.
You know, he's not quite, I think Peyton Manning was 39 when he retired, so he's not quite ready for retirement. But are you thinking ahead?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, you have to think ahead. You always have to. We hope Aaron, he wants to play till he's 40, and hopefully he can do that. But the reality of the game is that you have to plan for the future, and injuries are a part of the game as well. That's where I think one of the reasons we traded for Kizer to see if he could live up to the potential. He was a first-round draft pick, or high second-round pick, I think, for the Browns. The other thing I was going to say, the other key is not only having – if you have a franchise quarterback who is not on his rookie contract, it's really hard to have to make the money available to have a really good backup. So, like, for instance, last year, Philadelphia won a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback, but they had a quarterback on a rookie contract. So when you have a quarterback like we do, like Aaron, who's, one of the higher-paid quarterbacks in the league, it's hard to have enough money to spread around.
So the cap makes these choices harder
to
make.
Yes, it's a hard salary cap, and, you have to allocate your money judiciously, but the more players you have, because our new collective bargaining agreement, we're in our eighth year of a new collective bargaining agreement, but it really changed the rookie system so that the rookies' pay is much more reasonable. And if you have players that are performing very well on rookie contracts, that's a huge advantage.
Reasonable to you, maybe not to the rookie.
it's not reasonable to me either in the real world.
Fine. I'm going to go to Aaron Rodgers was hurt last year, but also you had a lot of people in the secondary that were hurt last year. Mm. How are they doing, and what do you expect from Clinton Dix?
Well, I tell you, having played in the secondary myself many years ago, I'm kind of watched that very closely. We struggled there over the last few years, and we've put a lot of draft resources into our secondary, particularly our corners. I think a key for us is going to be the play of Kevin King. He was our first-round pick last year. He has tremendous potential. He has shoulder problems, though, and so that you want to make sure that he can make it through and stay healthy, because when he's healthy, he plays at a very high level. HaHa Clinton Dix is a Pro Bowl safety. He's very young. Dropped off a little bit last year, but, I think that was – when Aaron went down, people don't realize when you lose a player like Aaron, that not only affects our offense but our defense, because the offense isn't on the field as much. Defense is having to play more downs, but in terms of our secondary, we drafted a couple players with our first and second round picks this year. Jair Alexander has looked really good. Now he's struggling with a little bit of a groin injury. And then Josh Jackson out of University of Iowa, our second round pick. So if those players can become what we think they will, that'll be a big, big bonus for us in our secondary.
I got to tell you, you're watching the game and your franchise quarterback goes down. What do you feel?
please get up.
That's kind of what I felt,
I think,
too,
we knew it was pretty serious. Unfortunately, it's part of the game. The reality of the game is there are injuries. You have to have depth. You got to have backups. And, we couldn't overcome the injury last year.
We are talking to Mark Murphy, who is the president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers, my favorite football team. I want to talk about the history of the Packers a little bit. It's your 100th year.
Yeah.
I do remember, as I said, the pre-Favre years, they were totally bleak. You recently said at Wisconsin Public Radio event that the 90s, the early 90s, were more precarious than people thought they were. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, you look, going farther back than the 90s, it's almost a miracle that the team is still in Green Bay. You look at the early years of the NFL, they were in Akron and Canton and Decatur, and they left all the small towns. And Green Bay is the only team that stayed in place, only small town team. And it's really a tribute to this community. I mean, five different times we've rallied together and raised money. And the most recent one, we had a stock sale in 2011, but that was really not for the survival of the team. But in the mid-90s, you know, there was a good chance that the Packers would have to leave Green Bay. And, you know, Bob Harlan, who was the president at the time, really galvanized the community and said, we need to make some major changes to the stadium. They were able to get the sales tax passed, and that was really – that led to the major renovation of Lambeau Field in 2003 that really it added the atrium. It turned Lambeau Field from a facility that was just used 10 times a year to now one. We had 700 different events at Lambeau Field last year, so it's used year-round. And that really was transformative for the organization, and it really put us now in a financial position. Well, just to give you a perspective, in the mid-90s, we were in the bottom quartile. We were one of the last eight teams in the league. Since the renovation in 2003, we've been in the top 10 every single year.
So investing money into the facilities actually makes the team better.
It has in our case. You have to make the right investments. Well, and the other key, and we see this, you know, we've continued to invest in the stadium on an annual basis, whether it be maintenance or improvements or additions. And, you know, I think it's worked well for us. And, you know, we want to, as I look at it, you know, Lambeau Field is one of the best assets that we have in this organization. So we need to make sure we take care of it and invest in it.
You mentioned stock, selling stock. There's been some criticism about selling stock. What do people get when they buy the stock to Green Bay?
They get a certificate. They get the right to come to our annual meeting. They get the right to vote. They get, you know, they don't get tickets. A lot of people say they would like that. We have a long waiting list for tickets. We also periodically have special shareholder items that they can purchase. So, I mean, it's really, and it's not a huge expensive. In 2011, I think it was $250. Mm-hmm. The best thing they get is that they get to say that they're an NFL owner.
Right.
And
they get to support
are you,
the Green
you're
Bay
not
Packers.
An owner? We got, you're, not, I assume not, you didn't get that.
Not yet, no. I just moved here. we are talking to Packers President and CEO Mark Murphy. We're going to be we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We have some calls about some of the controversy that's going on right now. We're going to get to that after the break. It's the Morning Show. Right now, we're talking to Mark Murphy and of the Green Bay Packers, and he is sitting here in our studios at WPR in Green Bay, and we are talking about their season. We are talking about some controversial issues with the NFL. We are also taking your calls, 800-642-1234, or ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We've got Jane from Green Bay. Jane, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Mark Murphy, I'm awfully glad to hear your voice again. I met you at the Fan Hall of Fame press conference in February this year, where my mother, Marguerite Bachuber, Muggs Bachuber, sang.
Oh, I know Muggsy. Yeah.
Yes, you know Muggsy. That's right. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about the Fan Hall of Fame as being the Packers is the only team in the NFL that has a Fan Hall of Fame, and over 40,000 people cast votes, and they voted from all over the world. It was so thrilling to see the support for the Packers through that.
Yeah, we're a very unique organization in a lot of ways, you know, with our structure, our ownership structure, the way our fans support the team. And so I think it's very fitting that, you know, we're the only team with a Fan Hall of Fame because our fans are tremendous. You know, one of the hardest things is choosing the winners because there's so many fans that are
like, what do you have to do to get into the Fan Hall of Fame?
You have to be a pretty rabid fan. Some of the letters are really inspiring that come, and usually comes from family members or friends that nominate them to be in the Hall of Fame. We do tend to favor people who are a little more experienced, have a little older. But we've had some younger people. It's you have to show passion, I'd say that's probably the key. I would say a little craziness sometimes, but. But in a very positive way.
We are talking to Mark Murphy and taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. So I want to talk about some of these controversial issues facing the team.
I was hoping we'd just list the issues and never have to talk about them, Carrie.
Sorry. Colin Kaepernick started this mass protest when he took a knee a couple of years ago, protesting violence against African Americans. This has cleaved the country. Has it cleaved the NFL?
It has. It's been a really difficult issue for us. And it's, we were actually playing the very first game. It was a first preseason game 3 years ago. We played at San Francisco. And now, before this, nobody knew about it, and none of us noticed. And all of a sudden, in the first quarter of the game, somebody said, "Did you notice that Kaepernick was kneeling?" No, nobody. But obviously, it's gotten a lot more attention. I think you're right. One of the things that concerns me is that the narrative or the story on this has switched. That it really is. The protest started about. And it was really focused on racial inequality, police treatment of minorities, and it's become that the players are disrespectful of the flag, don't support the military. That's never been the issue. It's really been for the players. And, Carrie, almost 75% of our players are African American. Mm-hmm. So these are issues that are very important to them. And the other thing that this issue has really it's divided our fans. It, quite honestly, I think it divides our players as well. You've got players on different sides of it. It's I'm really hopeful that I've been hopeful for a while that we can move past this and find a resolution. There have been ongoing discussions with the Players Association and representatives from the league office. We were hopeful that they could reach a resolution prior to the preseason games last night, but obviously that didn't take place. So, it's a difficult issue for everybody.
We've got Art from Milwaukee. Art, welcome to the program.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for being on the show. I wonder what listeners can do to show their support for Aaron Rodgers' very measured statement in support of the not only the troops, of course, but of the players who want to demonstrate. You've talked at some length about needing backup in terms of a quarterback, and Colin Kaepernick still remains, I think, without an offer from anyone. And, it just seems to be easy to say things, but maybe not so easy to do things.
Well, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'm really glad you brought up Aaron's comments. I thought and Aaron is such a great representative, and he's very thoughtful. He was actually our player rep. He's obviously a leader within our team, but I thought his comments about the national anthem issue were very good. And he's absolutely right. When he said that the best thing that LeBron James did was not respond when President Trump tweeted.
To reiterate, he said that this, what you just said, that this is an issue about social justice. It's not an issue about respecting the flag or disrespecting the flag. Yeah. It's just a form of protest. Steve from Sun Prairie, welcome to the program, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First, Mr. Murphy, I just want to thank you. My family has been Packer lovers back before, the NFL was founded, really. My grandfather was going to pre-Packer games before 1919, and I've been a Packer fan my whole life. I grew up in Chicago, still a Packer fan, and I want to thank you for finally beating the Bears to the point that we have more wins than they
do. It took a while to pass them. No, it's a great rivalry. And, I appreciate your comments. It, with our 100th year, One of the celebrations, we have a pretty big exhibit in our Hall of Fame. It's on the 1919 team. And if you haven't seen that, I really would encourage you to take a look at that. Needless to say, the teams were a little different than they are now. And the players, you know, the funniest thing was the size of the players. There were offensive linemen that were like 5'10", 180 pounds.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you have another question, Steve?
Did. And, you know, and that's what unites us as Packer fans, both our love for the Packers and hatred of the Bears. It brings us together. And it's, anything else is kind of colored bubbles here. But Colin started this. He is what divided us. And I do wish you had the courage to have your players stand up and force them to do it. And my question to you would be, if you had a lower-level employee that, say, worked at the Packer Pro Shop, and I hate to say anyone's lower level, but I think you know my point, if they wore a button that said abortion is murder, would you allow it?
No, I mean, obviously not. You wouldn't. I mean, there are limits. You know, it's the NFL is a very unique workplace, I would say that. There, and you're right, there are people within the league that say this is a workplace, it's private, you can set the rules as you want. But we really want to work with our players. You know, the players, we don't have a product. It's not like we're a manufacturer that's made.
Your
players are a product. So want to treat them well. And, you know, for me, what I would like to see, I think what kind of gets lost in this, so much of the focus is on the protest. I'd like to see us move beyond protest to progress. And we've had discussions with our players is, listen, we prefer that you stand. We want you to stand. We respect your right to protest. But let's move beyond that. Let's really focus on, you know, what are the issues? Let's work together on social justice programs and let's make a difference, because the purpose of the protest is to make progress.
Right. So let's move to flag that. So how do you move beyond that? How does the Green Bay Packers talk about these social justice issues?
Well, we've started to do a number of different things in the community. I mean, you know, we've worked with our police department here on some of the issues and seen if we can help. Just, you know, for instance, with some of the things that have been done across the league and I think we can do as well is, you know, having players go on ride along so they have a better appreciation for some of the issues that policemen face. You know, trying to get more people out, voter registration, that's a huge issue, particularly in underserved communities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's a lot of different things we can do. And we've had discussions with our players about different social justice initiatives and programs that could really help in a number of these areas. You know, the other thing, for all the talk about the protests, last year we had three players kneel for one game, mm-hmm. and that was it.
And then you locked arms.
And then it was a show of unity. Now, some people thought that was that was a protest, but in my mind it was a show of unity, not a protest.
So there has been a decision to ban protests. What happens if some of your players do?
Well, that policy is on hold.
Okay.
So while the Players Association and the league continue discussions. So that's what we're hoping that we can reach a resolution.
I got to ask you, you know, you used to be a player. You used to work for the Players Association. Mm-hmm. Now you are the CEO of a team. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of deal with that? You're sort of...
Well, that's what we're trying to work
you're
through.
You're on the other side of the table now. Yeah. How do you kind of...
Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, we all want what's best for the game, what's best for the league. So I look at it from that perspective. And, you know, I mean, it's not like I went straight from, you know, representing the players to, you know, the position I'm in. I had a long career in athletics administration. I've done a lot of things. But I do feel my perspective, not only as a former player, but with my involvement in the Players Association, is helpful in terms of some of these issues that we deal with.
We are talking to Mark Murphy, and we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to move on to concussions.
Sure.
This came home last year when Devontae Adams was knocked out cold playing the Bears.
Twice.
twice.
Well, and then in the Carolina game,
right,
too.
Head injury people, head injury scientists are really, really, really careful to say that there is no proof that concussions cause CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
You're better than me at that. CTE. Just call it CTE.
But there is a lot of correlation here. You're on the league's health and safety committee. Is the NFL taking this seriously?
Oh, absolutely. It's to me, it's the biggest issue, particularly from a long-term basis, facing the league. And, we have are absolutely taking it seriously. Over the last 10 years, we've passed almost 50 different safety-related rules. And, you know, so it's safety generally, but quite honestly, one of the main focus has been on concussions and what can we do to limit concussions. This year, if you've seen any of the preseason games, if you watched our game last night, I think there were 3 penalties on the illegal use of the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trying to what's happened over time, Kerry, is that players have been allowed to use the helmet as a weapon. And that's not good for the person hitting or the person getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
So this year was a pretty major step in, you know, just trying to take that play out of the game where the player lowers his head, initiates contact with the helmet. And a lot of commentators are saying it's going to change the game. It's not going to be able to be officiated. I think the players will adjust. They always have when we make rule changes, and I think it'll really be for the good of the game. The other thing that are very focused on is not only safety at the pro level, but working with colleges and then youth football through USA Football and some of the things that they've done, just making sure that the game is safe. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's risk. There's risk in every sport.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to minimize that, but you also want to make sure that people are aware of the tremendous benefits that come from playing football.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have more of a balanced view, I think, is something that we're really focused on.
So I want to go back to that helmet issue for a minute. There's a strain of thought that says the helmets make people feel safer than they really are. It's kind of a false sense of safety.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I do. And, Joe Paterno, obviously a legendary coach, said the very
Penn
best
State's
thing we
coach.
Could do. Yeah. Yep. The very best thing we could do was take the face mask off.
Hmm.
Players wouldn't be sticking their heads in if they didn't. So it's the helmet, but it's also the face mask. The face mask has become a huge shield. And, it's when you watch films from the 50s, 40s and 50s, nobody tackled with their head. It was all shoulder. It was all wrapping up.
Right.
And so that I think that's really what we need to start to get back to.
Have we changed, though? Like 20, 30 years ago, did we start to change the way we taught high school players how to tackle?
You know, it's funny. We talk to coaches at all levels. I've never heard a coach say, I teach my player to lead with his helmet, the crown of the head. I mean, you know, when I was playing, the big fear was if you led with the top of your head, that you could be paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because during that time period, Darryl Stingley had been paralyzed. And I think we're at a little bit of a moment there now with what happened to Ryan Shazier last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the players saw what happened to him. And that's really – that was kind of the motivation for the use of the helmet rule, is not only protect defenseless receivers, but also the players that are, you know, initiating the contact with their helmet.
So do you know people who have suffered from CTE?
I don't think any of my teammates, not that I'm aware of, but obviously there are quite a, well, you know, well, first of all, CTE can only be determined
after you're dead.
After death.
Yes,
yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. That's a very, and we've talked to medical experts all over the place. There's still a lot to be determined in terms of that, as you said.
Yeah. Causation is not correlation, but there seems to be a lot of correlation there. Brett Favre, former Packers quarterback, has come out in support of banning tackle football for kids under 12. What do you think of that?
That is something that I'm on the USA Football board, mm-hmm. so I've been involved with that for quite a while. That's something that we've looked at. What we have talked, rather than saying, and it's really, I think it's up to each parent to determine when is the right time for his son or daughter, their son or daughter, to start playing football. If you're uncomfortable with tackle football, what we say is a great transition or a great place to start is flag football. 7-on-7 football is very popular. I don't know if there's an ideal time to start. You know, we've tracked it, you know, in the younger tackle football, it's really pretty safe. I mean, it's very young. There aren't a lot of vicious hits. But, you know, I certainly know, I mean, that there's a lot of parents who are really concerned. Mm-hmm. And so if you can put it off, I know I didn't start playing tackle football till sixth grade. I wanted to play before that. And my son, I have one son who ended up playing college football. He's a little, was kind of before all this, but, you know, I look back on that. That was a great experience for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, you know, the life lessons that he learned, the friends that he made from it. Football is, you know, I was an athletic director, so I've seen all different sports. And football is really unique in terms of the team aspect of it, that no individual can really, although our quarterbacks in the NFL come pretty close, can dominate the game, but you really need all 11 players working together. And the life lessons that you can learn from football and I think that gets lost in a lot of this discussion, not to minimize the risk, but also not only the benefits and the life lessons, but just staying active. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, a bigger concern is childhood obesity. And,
right.
You know, that's why the Play 60 program in the NFL has been so well received.
You watch little kids play football, and they're tripping over themselves more than they are hitting people with their helmets. It's pretty cute.
And you saw them last night. We had a number of youth teams playing at halftime, and it's the best part is trying to watch them do a Lambeau leap. You know, they need a little help with their coaches.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Need a little airtime there. You have daughters also. Did they play football when they were growing up?
No, okay. None of my daughters. They were all athletes. Actually, my one daughter is still a really good equestrian rider, which I believe has a higher concussion rate than
tackle
football.
I think so, too. That is true.
Well, you know, and I think the highest concussion rate for any sport is girls soccer.
Because of the heading.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think they just banned heading, you know, up. I think you have to be 12 or a certain age. Because their necks aren't strong mm-hmm. enough to support the heading.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. We are talking to Mark Murphy, who is the president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. We're going to be back in the moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're sitting here this morning talking to Mark Murphy, the president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers. We've talked about how he expects the team to fare this year. We've talked about the unavoidable controversies surrounding the NFL these days. Now we're going to talk about the economic impact of the team. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We want to hear your stories of being a Packers fan. What's your earliest Packers memory? What does your Packers experience look like? Mm. Do you have tickets? Have you been lucky enough to get tickets? Do you go to games? How do you watch the Packers when you're just sitting in your living room? Do you get dressed up in all the regalia that you would go to games with? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. So, Mark, this is not your grandfather's NFL franchise. Mm-hmm. You run a real estate company as much as you do a sports franchise.
Well, I don't know. Thank you for saying that, but I don't feel myself as a real estate mogul. But, yeah, you know, we're a community-owned team, so for us, you know, we really have two main goals. Number one is to win championships and Super Bowls. And the second one is really unique. Other teams have profit motives, but for us, it's to make sure the team stays in Green Bay. And a big part of that is making sure that the economy in Green Bay is strong enough to support an NFL team. So that was kind of one of the motivations or impetus for Titletown. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've had a chance to see Titletown.
Yes.
But
I've eaten at the restaurant. Even.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, we're really excited. It's a little over a year old now. We've been planning and working on it for almost 8-9 years, and we're excited. You know, I think one of the most impactful projects that we'll have is our partnership with Microsoft. We're calling it Titletown Tech, and that building should be done by mid-December. And so we'll have an incubator. There'll be a venture capital fund. And then there will be an innovations lab. So if you're a business in Green Bay or in, you know, anywhere in the region and you're having technological issues, you can come to Titletown Tech and Microsoft employees will work with you.
Wow, so, interesting.
Yeah. So it's, to partner with a company like Microsoft and their president and CEO just happens to be a Packers fan. He's from Appleton, Wisconsin. And I think this, for him, one of his legacies is he wants to really make a difference in Northeast Wisconsin.
What was the financial situation when you took over 11 years ago?
It was better than certainly in the 90s. When I started, we were in the last 2 years of a collective bargaining agreement. And so a big focus, and probably, you know, was one of the main reasons I got hired, is that I had collective bargaining experience many years ago
on the other side.
But knowing that we would head into bargaining with the players. And, in 2010, we had a lockout that lasted a good portion of the offseason prior to the 2011 season. But we ended up with a 10-year agreement, which is pretty remarkable for any professional sports league or, you know, any union management contract. But I think it's really worked well for us, both the owners and the players. We've had labor peace, and so we've been able to invest in our stadiums. We've been able to negotiate long-term agreements with the broadcast networks, and so we're in a much stronger financial position now than we were when I started.
We are talking to Mark Murphy, who is, of course, the president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Elaine from Colfax, welcome to the program.
Hi. I think you do a great job, and I really appreciate everything you're doing. I just thought that James Lofton did a fine job as a new preseason announcer. I thought he was witty and insightful and added a lot. And I just think that bringing back players from all different eras keeps the interest with the fans. And it's not like when they hang up their cleats, it's over and it's done. I think it's a kind of beautiful testimony to the Packers caring about their former players and also the fans to keep them active in the organization. I wondered if that's some kind of principle that's unique to the Packers.
Well, first of all, I appreciate the comments about James Lofton. He's a talented broadcaster. He's had a long career, done very well. And, for years we had Rich Gannon, and he and Kevin Harlan, who does our play-by-play, often worked together. But Rich ended up leaving this offseason to do the Raiders preseason. And so we were really fortunate to find James. But I appreciate your comments because I didn't get to – when I'm watching the game, I watch it in person. I don't watch it on TV. But, in terms of our alumni overall, we really put a lot of resources into our alumni relations. We have an alumni suite that's – I think we seat 48. So and any alumni can come back for a game and they can go to a suite and it's all free for them. We do a number of different things. We're a little unique. You know, I compare it to my situation with the Redskins. With the Redskins – a high percentage of the players end up living in the Washington, D.C. area because mm-hmm. there's so many opportunities there. Here in Green Bay, you know, not a lot of our former players live here year-round, so we have to bring them back. And so we want them to feel welcome here, and we try to do a lot of different things to bring them back. And, you know, particularly this year in our 100th season, you'll see a lot of alumni events, alumni. Mm-hmm. We had them on our Lambeau Field Live when we were at Summerfest and EAA and the State Fair, and they were involved in the Packers experience. And our fans, you know, I mean, they love our history and a tradition and a chance for them to see an interview or to meet and spend some time with some of our players is pretty special for them.
And that's part of the fan experience is part of what's going on outside of the actual stadium. I mean, you want to make this an experience that people can come to, even not during football season.
Yeah, absolutely. So during the football season, we want you to come for, you know, rather than just the game, you know, spend 2 or 3 days, go downtown, some of the different things that are happening there. But no, it's really making Green Bay a destination year-round. And, you know, for us, it's building on the success of the renovation of Lambeau Field. And, quite honestly, Lambeau Field's become, you know, it's iconic. And, I don't want to brag, because, you know, but it really is. I mean, we've got people that come from all over the world that mm-hmm. they just want to see Lambeau Field. And that's why it's so important for us to continue to invest in it.
I got to tell you, the first time I was here was in May, I'm just driving down the road, and there it is, Lambeau Field, and I just stopped. I just pulled over, took a picture and sent it to my kids, and was like, I'm in heaven. I just arrived.
It's really unique. I mean, it's in a neighborhood. And
yes,
that's what
it's
kind
in
of
a
makes
neighborhood.
It special, and it just kind of pops up, and you know, and over the years, the Packers have really done a nice job with the renovations to it. And, you know, even like if I gave you a tour in the back of the house, even this morning it would be clean. I mean, that's our facilities. I mean, immediately they clean everything up. And, you know, you compare that to some of the other stadiums across the league and, you know, that are much newer, you know, within a few years. And, you know, especially in the back of the house, you go through it, it's just filthy. And that's where I think the money and, you know, part of it, Kerry, a big part of the sales tax. So the sales tax that supported the major renovation, they also put aside money for maintenance. And it's funded, I think we're funded through 2031. And it's a pretty significant amount we put in every year. And, that's just been tremendous for us.
And it fuels jobs. It
yes.
fuels jobs for the
yes.
maintenance people.
Yeah.
We are taking your calls for Mark Murphy, 800-642-1234. Charlie from Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm a longtime season ticket holder. I've just dumped my tickets after about 35 years. Speaking of money, that's one of the main reasons. It's getting to be prohibitive for a common working man to go to the game anymore. And, you know, it's way up, and I realize you're the medium of all the teams in the league, but still the medium's awful high for common people. But I know you'll have no problem replacing me with the waiting list. It's just changed. It's all about the money nowadays, NFL in the hole. And I don't know. I've had enough. I enjoy the games. I may still go tailgate, and I may scalp a really expensive ticket, but it's $300 to $400 for me and my wife to go, not including a motel, anyway, that's my little thing. So thanks.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But, yeah, you're right. Our policy – and, you know – there's no question. You know, the tickets are more expensive, And what we try to do, Carrie, is it's a little bit of a balancing act. We want to be as affordable as possible, but we also have to be fair to the other teams. And you know, under the way the revenue share works, you know, 40% of the revenue goes to the visiting team. It goes into a pool. And what we have heard in the past, because the year before I got here, or my first year here, we had slipped, I think, to 30th in the league in terms of the average ticket price. And a couple owners said, you know, you sell out every game, you have 135,000 seats, people on your waiting list, you shouldn't be last in the league in your average ticket price. Mm. So our goal has been to be right at the league average. And, you know, he's right. It's, you know, when new stadiums come in, ticket prices go way up. And so just to stay at the average, we've had to be aggressive in terms of our ticket price increases.
Do you offer a lottery? Do you offer some low-income tickets to different communities?
Well, we have the Brown County Lottery. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they're not low-income. We have – our preseason tickets are less expensive than the regular season. We made that change a few years ago. You know, Carrie, it's really changed, and I'm sorry the caller went off, but it's become more of a financial transaction. When I was playing, and even in the early part of my career in athletics administration, if you sold a ticket, you were scalping, and that was wrong. You didn't do that. Now it's a secondary market.
That is true.
And so I from a financial standpoint, he would have been better off keeping his tickets because we have, I believe we still have the highest markup on our tickets. So he could go to one or two games and then sell the rest of them and make money on the deal.
Interesting.
And it's become more of a financial transaction for our fans rather than, you know, just purchasing tickets and going to every game.
Okay, that breaks my heart a little bit, I got to tell you.
The other thing, well, that's the reality of it. I mean,
right.
The other thing that makes our tickets a little more affordable is that we have two packages. So we have, because we used to play some of our games in Milwaukee, we have a Milwaukee package. So 3 of the 10 games are for the Milwaukee games, and then the remaining 7 are for Green Bay games.
Are you still playing in Milwaukee?
We don't play games there, but we still have Milwaukee season ticket holders.
Okay. No. We are taking your calls. One more call, I think, maybe two. Dwayne from Weston, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome. Thank you. I agree with Mark on how the team is a great asset to the state. And when he was saying how it is impeccable, he kept the stadium and the grounds and all the buildings. And that's pride of ownership. And that's a Midwest thing, I think. And I met Ray Nitschke when I was a kid down in East Dubuque, Illinois. So I grew up in Illinois and was a mile from the Wisconsin state line and a mile from Iowa. So we had Bear fans, Viking fans, and Packer fans in our house. And it meant for some interesting
all in one house. Jeez.
Yeah. And I met Ray. He came to like a Lions club when we were a kid. And I remember standing in the bathroom. He was next to me, and he was a mountain of a man compared to his 11-year-old kid. And I got to ask the your host, Mark, then I moved to Iowa, but does she know why Iowa, you probably know why, but does she know why Iowa does not have a pro football team?
No, I don't. No,
I think there's an answer.
Yeah, right, I think there's an answer here. But I think also he went away. So sorry about that, Dwayne. I think we lost you. I have one more question for you. We'll find out why Iowa doesn't have a pro football team. But I have one more question for you, sir. February 3rd, 2019. I expect you're going to be busy watching your team win its last game of the season
in Atlanta, Georgia. Mercedes-Benz Dome. Yeah.
I love that. Who do you think you're going to be playing? Let's talk about the opposition here.
It's hard to go against New England.
I try not to.
I grew up in Buffalo.
Them.
I'm a huge Buffalo fan. I think this is the Bills. This is going to be their year. Although they'll lose to us early in the year and then rally and come back, and it would be heaven for me to have a Buffalo Green Bay Super Bowl.
Okay, we are.
I think I'm the only person in the world that's in favor of that.
Okay, fine. Not New England. Let's just say not New England. We've spent the last hour talking to Mark Murphy, former NFL player and college athletic director, better known these days as the president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers. Mark, thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Karen. It's my pleasure.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Boltina is the executive producer. Wrapping up our time in Green Bay, thank you also to Wisconsin Public Radio's regional staff here, especially Ellen Clark. I'm Carrie Kaufman. This is the Ideas Network.